Welcome back to What's at Risk. I'm Mike Christian.
We have a serious emergency on our hands.
Well, there's Russians in the front yard. There's Martians on the ceiling.
Neil Strauss hardly seems like a guy who'd kill a goat or gut it with his own hands. A slim intellectual in silver jewelry and designer jeans, he doesn't appear to be the kind of person who would stash food in a forest or plot an escape from his Laurel Canyon home using fire trails and a motorcycle he barely knows how to ride. Yet that's precisely what Strauss has learned to do over the last 3 years in an effort to prepare himself should society collapse.
Don't you have some kind of a line that you keep open for emergencies or for celebrities? I'm both. I'm a celebrity in an emergency.
I ain't getting up. Well, it's dangerous out there.
Life is like that. Sometimes at the height of our revelries, when our joy is at its zenith, when all is most right with the world, the most unthinkable disasters descend upon us.
It started after Y2K raised the specter of a doomsday. After September 11th prompted him to purchase a gas mask, and after Hurricane Katrina made him realize the most powerful nation in the world couldn't protect its own citizens, his journey is chronicled in his new book, Emergency, This Book Will Save Your Life. We were born with a silver spoon in our mouths. Bad things happened to previous generations, says Strauss, explaining the original third-person premise for Emergency, which evolved into a first-person survivalist how-to. We had it all, continues Strauss, who is in his late 30s. The Cold War was over. The internet was bringing everybody together. Wars were a thing of the past. Then all the things that happened from 2001 to today, it was like dominoes falling over. All of a sudden, I realized that all the things you read about in history books, they could happen to you.
Would you please tell me how I can see this as anything but a total disaster?
Terrorist attacks, natural disasters, wars, disease, and economic collapse. What would you do if any of these things occurred today? What if there was a way you could learn to be self-sufficient and survive without government help?
People, listen up. This is a national security emergency. We have an imminent threat.
Emergency is one man's story of a dangerous world and how to stay alive in it. In a witty, epic journey spanning 8 years, five-time New York Times best-selling author Neil Strauss looks at an America that's lost its sense of safety. He steps into the lives of billionaires buying second passports, survivalists buying gasoline, primitivists building self-sufficient communities, cult leaders preaching doomsday, expatriates hiding their assets, and ordinary citizens stockpiling guns, getting second passports, and going off the grid.
I ain't getting up, well, it's dangerous out there.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr. Yes. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
In the process, Strauss tackles his own fears and anxieties in a remarkable transformation that outdoes his million-copy-plus bestseller, The Game. Strauss ends up saving more than just his own life when he puts his new skills to use as a rescue worker, helping to capture a serial arsonist and treat victims of the deadly Metrolink train collision in California.
It's an emergency with Bonnie.
Had a little disaster, didn't you, fella?
Along the way, Strauss develops a formula for survival and safety in these uncertain times, revealing scores of tips and tricks that could save your home, your money, your loved ones, and your life.
We're speaking with Neil Strauss, author of Emergency. This book will save your life. So why'd you write the book?
I wrote the book because I all of a sudden saw all these horrible things that started happening in the world, especially being raised in, let's say, the 80s and the 90s, when it just seemed like America was the lone superpower, and internet and tech stocks were booming, and the internet was bringing everybody together. And then, of course, Y2K didn't happen, so we thought, well, what's going to happen to us? And we pretty much soon learned that a lot could happen to us, from 9/11 to Hurricane Katrina to the bank collapses to the economic crisis now. And I just thought, belonging to the generation that learns to program HTML now instead of joining the Boy Scouts, I sort of thought, well, I better learn how to take care of myself, because I realized I had no survival skills whatsoever.
What do you think are the odds of society as we know it collapsing now?
I think the odds of society as we know it collapsing now are pretty low. But on the other hand, the chances of, say, an earthquake or an ice storm or other accidents happening are pretty high for some people. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a total civilization is going to collapse and we're going to be, you know, in caves beating each other. You know, I really doubt we're going to see that happen.
No Lord of the Flies scenarios or anything.
Exactly.
But I do think your premise resonates with people, and I do think all of us maybe feel like we've gotten softer down through the years, and you know, that we don't have that skill set really to survive. Throw most of us that are in cities out into the wilderness, and we're probably going to be stuck out there. Don't you think that these types of things have always happened, and maybe we're just not as prepared now as a society as we might have been in the past?
Yeah, and I think we're also incredibly dependent. We think, well, if something happens, our government's going to take care of us, so we can just go about our ordinary lives. But if you go on the FEMA site, for example, they basically tell you, and this was scariest to me, is, you know, I talked to everybody for this, from hardcore survivalists to countercultural commune people, but the scariest people were the government. You know, talking to the FBI, talking to the rescue workers, talking to fire captains and chiefs of police, who basically say, if there's a disaster, and last year there were 75 disasters in the country, you're on your own. You know, you can call 911 all you want, but they're not getting to you till they're done with everything else. And if you want to be really frightened, go on to Google Image Search and search the National Response Plan. And you'll see a flow chart of how hard it is to get federal aid. A request has to go through maybe 30 or 40 agencies, and that's why you have five-day holdups like in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's definitely been proven with Katrina in spades. You think any kind of a disaster, unless it's just sort of a random reaction from a local force, we're not going to really be able to rely on the government to help us in any meaningful way?
Right. I mean, they will eventually once everything else is dealt with. But in the meantime, you and your family may be on your own without water, without electricity, without utilities for 7 days. Or you may have to evacuate. And are you ready to evacuate? Do you have a bag you can grab that has all your important documents, that has some cash, that has some things? Because I think we all know, like, say you're out one night and just the cash machines aren't working. All of a sudden you panic and you're like, oh, what do? I have no money anymore. You know, we're very dependent on a system that maybe isn't as dependable as we think it is.
Why should we learn wilderness skills since most of us live in the city?
I think one really learns these things for peace of mind. In other words, I was so worried when I read the headlines in the newspaper, and I'd feel like a victim of the economy and things like this. But once I learned wilderness survival, to the degree that I learned to go out in the woods with nothing but a knife and the clothes on my back and survive, well, you don't have to worry about the economy or whatever's going to happen, because you know, even in a worst-case scenario, which is extreme, you can still take care of yourself. It gives you a certain sense of freedom and sort of invulnerability to these headlines that we read every day that send some of us into panic attacks.
What about urban survivor skills? Did you learn those too?
I did. Oh, my God. There's a course I took. And the flip side is, some of the stuff is just fun. So I took this urban survival class, and it taught me lockpicking, hot wiring cars. For one of our final exams, they handcuff you, put you in a trunk, and start like going down streets over bumps and stuff, and you have to basically escape from the handcuffs and escape from the trunk. And it's basically taught for either soldiers going to Iraq or people who are maybe traveling in countries where they could get kidnapped. But sometimes it's just sort of fun, that fun knowledge that you sort of want to be the action hero you watch on television when you were a kid.
Did you just find a series of different types of classes, survival classes? How did you set out to have this curriculum of learning how to survive in different situations?
It was just sort of a process, because it was never a plan for a book. I just sort of started getting worried about where the country was going. And first I fell in with some billionaires who were getting second passports and moving their money offshore. And then I thought, well, you know, all is fine and dandy if you have a lot of money, but what do you do if you don't? And I fell in with the wilderness survival people. And I just sort of, you know, cherry-picked skills where I found them, whether it was from the extreme right-wing, you know, gun-toting guys, or the extreme left-wing, they're people called permaculture people who are building these self-sustaining little mini villages already.
In my mind, that's what a survivalist is these guys that go stockpile guns and food and live in northern Idaho someplace. Is that practical if the whole world comes unhinged?
The thing I really learned is there is a certain selfish mentality to that, and unlike the movies, one dies alone and we survive together in groups. So it's really interesting, because what I ended up doing is, once I learned all these skills, and they're amazing skills to learn, I thought, well, rather than being that guy with my shotgun sitting on my MREs saying, get off my land, you know, I joined a search and rescue team where I can actually, you know, I've used these skills that I learned just, say, 2 days ago. I was using the medical skills, working, say, standby medical on a marathon, or when there was the Metrolink train crash here you know, helping out the victims. So I think as times get hard, one learns not to be afraid of them, but to actually embrace them, because it brings people closer together, and it is character building.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. How do you get yourself in those situations? Are you now part of a team that's on call to go help people in these types of situations, or is it just random that you come across it?
I wanted to get disaster experience. I wanted to know that after I learned all this stuff, if something happened, that I wouldn't just freeze. And so I thought, why don't I get some real emergency experience? So I found a local search and rescue team. I'm sure there are local branches of either search and rescue teams or the Mountain Rescue Association or something where people can volunteer. And the cool thing is, too, you get training and you get to give back. And also most interesting is you learn a lot of the survival tips maybe you learned growing up were actually just old wives' tales, and if something happened, would actually hurt you.
What disasters and emergencies are in our future? We Americans stand in the crosshairs of ominous social and environmental change in the early years of the 21st century. Each day, media reports stream into major networks as they expose symptoms erupting across the planet. Water shortages, ozone pollution, species extinction, gridlock traffic, energy crises,
dogs and cats living together,
and other calamities dominate the news.
This is something you're contemplating?
What? It'd be a disaster of major proportions.
In a very dire look at our future, the eminent historian Arnold Toynbee said, "The U.S. will set a record in the rate of rise and fall of an empire. Between wide open borders and the fall of the dollar and growing population against a declining resource base, the U.S. will be defeated from within. Mobs will rule the streets in a nation that is now the third largest in the world and unable to support its population except by taking resources from other countries." James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency, writes, "How could such a catastrophe be so close at hand, and yet civilized, educated people in free countries with free news media and transparent institutions be so uninformed about it? I do not believe that the general ignorance about the coming catastrophic end of the cheap oil era is the product of a conspiracy. Mostly it is a matter of cultural inertia, aggravated by collective delusion and nursed in the growth medium of comfort and complacency." Author Eric Davis referred to this as the consensus trance.
"Please tell me how I can see this as anything but a total disaster."
Kunstler continues, "The world will be in trouble long before we run out of oil, when we reach peak production. At absolute peak, there will still be plenty of oil left in the ground. In fact, half of all the oil that ever existed. But it will be the half that's deeper down, harder and costlier to extract, sitting under harsh and remote parts of the world, owned in some cases by people with a grudge against the United States. And this remaining oil will be contested by everyone." Note that China adds 27,000 cars to its highways every week. At peak and just beyond, there is a massive potential for system failure of all kinds, social, economic, and political. Peak is quite literally a tipping point. Beyond peak, things unravel and the center does not hold. Beyond peak, all bets are off about civilization's future. In historic memory, the world has never faced such dangerous circumstances as it does in the early 21st century.
If this were the last night of the world, what would I do? What would I do that was different?
Kunstler continues with his gloomy view of the future. "The cheap oil age created an artificial bubble of plentitude for a period not much longer than a human lifetime. So I hazard to assert that as oil ceases to be cheap and the world reserves move toward depletion, we will be left with an enormous population that the ecology of the earth will not support. The journey back toward non-oil population homeostasis will not be pretty. We will discover the hard way that population hypergrowth was simply a side effect of the oil age. It was a condition, not a problem with a solution. That is what happened, and we are stuck with it." Kunstler goes on to say, the damage to global ecologies by human activity accelerated rapidly with the onset of industrialism. The 20th century, with its oil-nurtured bloom of human population, was especially harsh. Everywhere, biological complexity was compromised or reduced to monoculture. Habitats were wrecked. Species exterminated. Terrain and water were poisoned. The amount of asphalt paving alone in the United States represents an ecological insult beyond comprehension. America remains in her consensus trance brought on by decades of unlimited growth and resources. Her citizens cannot imagine water shortages. Kunstler said, the vast majority of the Earth's surface consists of water, yet only 3% of that is fresh water. The World Bank famously declared, the wars of the 21st century will be fought over water. On a note of certitude, Kunstler states, climate change, environmental degradation, falling living standards, and social disorder will be the oil age's gift for entropy to future generations. The transient and ephemeral condition of industrial hypergrowth that the world has known for just over 200 years will be over. Energy will be at an extreme premium, and human survival skills will be the new capital. In the end, what can we do, and what can we expect? America is not special, Kunstler said, nor immune to either the hazards of circumstance or the tendencies of human nature. Revolution might occur. The future is now here for a living arrangement that had no future. Suburbia has a tragic destiny. Suburbia is going to lose its value catastrophically as it loses its utility. American life in the 21st century has the best chance of adjusting to the long emergency in a physical pattern of small towns surrounded by productive farmland. Now, unlike Kunstler, economist Jeff Rubin takes a little rosier view of the future. I think, ironically, it's going to be a return to the past in terms of the reemergence of local economies. Like many oil crisis prophets, Mr. Rubin is a disciple of the peak oil theory, the concept that world oil production is near its peak and is destined to a long, slow decline as existing low-cost oil fields dry up and new supplies become harder and more expensive to unlock. But unlike many previous peak oil books, which typically don't get much past "we're in big trouble," Mr. Rubin's conclusions are refreshingly optimistic. His world of the oil-starved future, at least for Western societies, looks a lot like the bygone years of our fond memory, where people work and vacation nearer to home, eat locally grown foods, and buy locally produced goods, and suburban sprawl is replaced by revitalized cities. I think it will really restructure the economy in ways that people haven't even begun to imagine, Rubin said. But I think, ironically, it's going to be a return to the past in terms of the reemergence of local economies. Indeed, the book's title is derived from this central argument that expensive fuel will force a reversal of globalization as long-distance trade becomes increasingly expensive and impractical.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
But will our future be that of Jeff Rubin's optimistic view or Kunstler's long emergency? Or neither? American civilization stands in the crosshairs of history, similar to Rome. Will we gather ourselves toward rational action that begets a sustainable future? Or will we commit national suicide by adding millions upon millions of people? Will we discover a magic bullet? Will we become victims of our own hubris? In all great social change, it takes a consciousness shift of the people and the leaders. That shift translates into critical mass of activated citizens to engage change within their society, and that leads to a tipping point toward a more positive and plausible future. We're back with Neil Strauss, author of Emergency.
Do you notice if people in those situations rise up, certain people, you know, like the heroes of old days, sort of a common person rises up and does things that are extraordinary just because of the circumstance?
I began this book with a negative view of human nature. I thought if in these situations people maybe tend to get selfish and greedy. But when I was actually on survival in a disaster situation and I read the literature, you're absolutely right that people sort of band together and they become incredibly generous. And it's only when resources are scarce and people have to compete for, you know, basic kind of need to survive that they get nasty. But in general, I saw people rise up. And the other interesting thing is when you're a rescue worker and when you're helping people out, there are no such things as heroes. If you're a renegade guy who's going to go in there like some, you know, movie character, you're only going to be putting everyone in the whole system into danger.
You mentioned hanging out with billionaires before, and I think in your book you maybe allude to the fact that oftentimes the wealthier are even more scared and paranoid than the rest of us, which is hard to believe, but why would that be?
Well, simply because they have more to lose.
Yeah.
You know who's not scared? It's the homeless people. Interestingly, they do a lot of the things that the survivalists taught. For example, they bury caches. It's kind of scary. You actually know all over the city there are little hiding spots, and I spent a day looking for them, and you would literally find buried guns and things like that.
I think as the line in the song says, freedom's what you have when you have nothing left to lose, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's another thing, which is when you talk about your classical survivalists, right, the things I learned, such as shooting guns or flying planes or riding motorcycles, they're actually more dangerous than not learning to do those things, because your chances are larger of dying in a motorcycle or a plane crash than, say, a massive worldwide apocalypse. So the fact is, I think people do these things not for safety but for freedom. For a sense of control.
Now, you just mentioned this briefly, but maybe it's in your book a little bit. Do you think humans do revert to a survival at all costs, sort of Lord of the Flies type of behavior in a complete disaster?
I did a little survival expedition with my reluctant girlfriend, and we found ourselves in a situation like where we literally had no food for a couple days. Almost ended up like the guy in Into the Wild. And she's a sweet, gentle person. And after 2 days, she was literally saying, like, I would kill someone for food right now. But I thought if she would say that, it was just weird how all of a sudden these violent thoughts started coming to her head. I'd never heard those things before or since. And it kind of made me realize that for those of you if you've experienced extreme hunger, not just on a diet, but extreme hunger where you literally there was no food you could get to or in sight, you feel that panic and desperation.
What do your friends and your girlfriend think about this stuff that you're dragging them on all these survivalist things?
Well, it was funny because when I first started doing it 3 years ago, there was the eye rolling, but now I found that they're really into it, and people are asking me, where did you learn, what do you suggest I go out and buy, and, can you give me a list of what you have, or can you buy some stuff for me, or where did you take that wilderness survival course, and things like that. So it's just strange. There's definitely something going on. And also you see, like, for example, the swine flu thing going on, and you see how idiotic people are about it, and you just realize that they just knew the information and were prepared. They wouldn't be, say, running in the airports, they're wearing those dust masks, which are completely useless. You need to throw, what's called a HEPA 95 or 90 or 95 mask to block things out. Then they're rubbing their eyes, and they're not wearing gloves, and you just think these people, they don't even understand what they're doing when something strikes and they panic. Instead of, I think learning this stuff gives you the ability to know to stay calm, because that's probably your number one survival skill anyway, staying calm.
I'm sure you've been asked this before, but why did you get a second citizenship in St. Kitts?
When the writing's on the wall, you just want to make sure you have a backup plan. So the idea was just to sort of like having a life insurance or health insurance. And then in Mumbai, for example, and I had relatives there when they were asking for people with U.S. or U.K. citizenships, being able to have another passport might be a nice way to survive, and maybe just wanting to travel to Cuba sometime.
What's the number one survival skill you think you've learned down through these last few years?
I'd say the number one would be like the ability not to panic in a crisis situation. I'd say if people want to go out and learn this stuff, the coolest thing they can do, and I know they do this in Boston, is to take a CERT class, C-E-R-T. It's an 8-week class. It's completely free. You basically learn the basics of how to manage any disaster that could happen, and you get a nifty green uniform, and you're qualified to help the community out in the event of a disaster and there being no rescue workers. It's a great way to learn and to give back, and it's free.
Well, Neil, did I miss anything? Anything you want to add for the listeners?
Since the book's called This Book Will Save Your Life, I'll tell you a safe tip that may save someone's life. How about that?
That'd be great.
To me, the most common cause of accidental death is not the stuff we've been talking about, but car injuries. And when I learned took EMT class, I learned that you're told to wear a seatbelt, but you're not told how to wear it. So most people wear it over their gut. And what happens if you put your seatbelt there, and I'm sure some people driving or listening right now want to look at this, is you put it over your abdomen, you get an accident, all that happens is it presses on all your vital organs in there, and you hurt something or you get internal bleeding, and it's a dangerous place to put your seatbelt. You actually want to wear it in your lap across what's called your iliac crest, your pelvic bone right there. So if you're in an accident, you're not crushing your vitals.
It's great advice.
So it's amazing how you're not taught this in school.
And not something I've ever heard before. That's interesting. Neil Strauss, the author of Emergency, This Book Will Save Your Life. Neil, how can everybody find the book, and do you have a website?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you can probably get it, hopefully get it in any bookstore. And my website's just my name, neilstrauss.com.
That's it for this week's edition of What's at Risk. I'd like to thank our very special guest tonight,
Dr. Sherwin Newland, author of The Soul of Medicine,
and Neil Strauss, the author of Emergency, This Book Will Save Your Life. I'd like to thank our producer, Johnny Pfister of Ringo Studio, and our associate producer, Scott Cooper. We're interested in what you're thinking about. Send us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com and let us know what's on your mind.
Podcasts of What's at Risk are available at the WBZ.com on the air drop-down menu by clicking on What's at Risk. You've been listening to What's at Risk, heard every Saturday night on WBZ News Radio 1030 and streaming on WBZ.com.
When your company is considering risk management and consultative support for your business insurance, make the right choice and call Risk Strategies Company. With offices in Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Irvine, California, Chicago, and Providence, Risk Strategies Company takes a team approach to protecting your assets efficiently and cost-effectively. By offering a wide range of services and capabilities, Risk Strategies Company brings the highest level of expertise to clients in all areas of insurance and risk management, delivering insurance solutions, extensive carrier relationships and marketing expertise, claim advocacy, loss control safety management, health and welfare coverage, life and executive compensation plans, personal insurance lines, and surety. For the most comprehensive risk management and insurance coverage for your business, depend on Risk Strategies Company. Learn more at risk-strategies.com or call 617-330-5700. 617-330-5700.